This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show. It is a Tuesday, the 5th of March, and this is what we've got for you. Well, lots of breaking news this morning on the show, not least of which was Parkin, the Dubai parking company, announcing the pricing for their IPO, which is live today. You can buy shares in it, or at least you can apply to buy shares in it. Demand is likely to be strong. We've got the details of that. We've got reaction to that. Also reaction to breaking news out of China this morning. National People's Congress is ongoing. It is, of course, the world's second biggest economy. What else have we got for you? Well, more breaking news. Yep. It's been that kind of day. We had PMI data out at 8:15 this morning for the UAE and also Saudi Arabia. And big love to Ralph Vega, who got up early in Berlin this morning. That's where he's based, to speak to us. 8:15 Dubai time, 6:15 Berlin time, about those reports. Why? Because even though he's based in Berlin, his day job is the head of the Middle East and North Africa for S&P Global Market Intelligence. He's the economist. He's the guy who puts these reports together. Fascinating insights from Ralph. And then an even deeper dive on this from Chris Payne. He's an economist based in Riyadh. He was looking at the Saudi numbers and giving us the kind of boots on the ground take from Riyadh. And then finally, we got loads of questions this morning, not just about the Parkin IPO. We did. Also about SALIC, because their full year audited numbers came out yesterday, and they are sister companies, both born out of the RTA. Samir Lakhani was our go-to expert on that. He's the managing director of Global Capital Partners, so stay tuned for insights from Samir Lakhani. All that to come. First up, though, let's jump straight into those breaking stories. Breaking news this morning, Brandy. We've got details of the Parkin IPO, haven't we? We know it was announced last week, but this morning we've had the publication of what the share price is going to be and therefore what the valuation is going to be.
Yeah, we do. Look, we have a price, basically. Well, we have a price range, which is at the top end of what a lot of market watchers were expecting. It's also very narrow, between 2 dirhams and 2 dirhams 10 fils for a share for its IPO. We are going to be speaking to the market watcher, Samir Lakhani, a little bit later on, not just about Parkin and what it means particularly for retail investors. It basically means that the flotation will be worth around the 1.5 billion dirhams mark, again, expected. They're on sale, the shares, until the 13th of March. What kind of look in are retail investors going to get for this? What kind of allocation are they likely to get? Are we likely to, well, we will almost definitely see it oversubscribed. That's baked on. But will we see that range increased? What's likely given the last two RTA IPOs? We've got Samir on that this morning. We've also got him on the SALIC numbers, one of our other stories this morning. SALIC, another car out the RTA stable, is going to, we're going to be looking at the first year earnings and digging into some of the numbers there to tell us not just what they tell us about the health about SALIC and all three of these companies, parking, taxis, and the SALIC numbers themselves are basically a population play. How many cars are on the road, whether you're jumping in one that someone else is driving, whether you're parking one, or whether you're going under a toll gate. And the numbers are fairly uniform, and they're in line with what we saw from the taxi guys yesterday, around the sort of 8 or 9%. Trips for SALIC were up 10%, the number of vehicles registered up 8%, and one that I know that I've personally contributed to, fines, and I quote, performed strongly, up 7.5%.
Quick question, quick straw poll in the studio, and I'm going to include Serena Kelly in this. Morning, SK.
Morning, guys.
Does any of us know how much they spent on SALIC last year?
I do mine in batch lots, so I tend to stick 500 dirhams or 1,000 dirhams on the tag, so I then don't need to think about it for 6 months.
So what would be your best guess?
I think I do that about 3 times a year.
So what, 1,500 dirhams?
Yeah, and then I pay about 2 fines because I get all the text messages telling me that I've only got X amount left and I ignore them until the last possible minute.
So
see Brandy's attitude to fuel as well.
So 2 grand maybe last year, best guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
2 grand.
About 1.5 to 2.
1.5 to 2. Serena Kelly, do you even know?
I'm going to sound really, really ridiculous now because my husband tends to put it on the SALIC card. But I think we budget for about 100 dirhams a month, but that's per vehicle. And we've got 2 vehicles in our family. So 200 dirhams a month, I think, goes on.
Okay, so that's about 2.5K for the Kelly household. Thomas, you live a long way out of town.
Anywhere near that. I genuinely think it'd be under a grand.
Okay, less than 1,000 dirhams. Because even though you live far out of town...
Don't use Selleck.
You don't use the Shadeside Road that often.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I also I forgot the password for my Selleck app. So I have to get the scratchy cards from the petrol station still.
Old school.
Old school, man.
Oh. We love it. Tom thinks he's less than a grand. I have no idea. Wife does it. Probably not that much because my commute is up and down Hesse Street. So I don't do it that often. I don't do the school run. Even if I did, when I do it, it's Alkhill Road. So, of course, I use Selleck every now and then, but it's not a daily... I'm not going shell just to Jebel Ali every day. Anyway, just...
Should we have a prize? A non-prize competition. A completely informal, absolutely not sanctioned competition with no prize whatsoever for whoever is putting the most on their Selleck card and why.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, all economic eyes on Beijing this week. It's the National People's Congress. Buses and taxis and cars taking people to the event. They'll be listening to this. For that is top of the Spotify charts in China at the moment. More business-wise, Tom Urquhart, you've been looking at this one, haven't you? What's going on?
Well, you got the big meeting, haven't you? The Chinese government under pressure at the moment to come up with solutions for its troubled economy. And that's why those questions are being asked at the NPC, the National People's Congress, which gets underway today. In fact, is underway as we speak. 3,000 delegates gathering in the cavernous Great Hall of Beijing, the Great Hall of the People, that is, basically to listen to what the party are going to do, what they've got planned as well. And there is going to be a big focus on all things economy. As I know, you've been looking at some of the comments coming out, a lot of analysts suggesting that obviously the economy is going to be part and parcel of the policies moving forward, setting themselves some ambitious targets. But as you highlighted a few moments ago, Deeney, some interesting comments coming out from the leaders as well, saying ordinarily you'd expect them to get up there and say, it's all going to be fine, everything's on track, we've got this. But no, a bit more realistic.
Yeah, exactly. Li Qiang is the premier. He takes centre stage at this event. Not meeting journalists this time, but he has given a speech. And yeah, very candid assessment of the Chinese economy. The target of about 5% growth has been set, but he said it's going to be very, very difficult to achieve this. And that's got a lot of economists thinking, well, does that mean we're going to have a whole bunch of stimulus around the corner to give a bit of a sugar rush to the Chinese economy? Ed Bell's been watching it closely, Senior Director of Market Economics, Emirates NBD. We asked him, as everyone gathers in Beijing for this event, what's your read on the China economy?
So China is still targeting real GDP growth of 5% this year. That will be roughly on pace with its performance in 2023. But I think achieving that kind of growth is going to be a challenge for this year, as China's economy won't have the sort of reopening benefit that it had in 2023. And so far, the government has been quite reluctant to announce wide-scale stimulus to support growth, which could potentially inflate the debt problems in China again. We've had comments out from the prime minister there saying it won't be easy for China to reach these kind of targeted growth rates and that policy support and joint efforts were needed. So there could be some more indirect measures to help support China's economy. Most projections, including from the IMF, are for China to record less than 5% growth this year. And that would be the first time it did so in a year that wasn't impacted by the pandemic since 1990.
Yeah, we've got some data out from China in the last 20 minutes, which is the non-manufacturing PMI. In the way that here we look at non-oil and oil PMI, and in fact we're going to get some numbers for both the UAE and Saudi at about 8:15 this morning, and have not one but two economists to go through those reports for you. China looks at the services index and looks at the non-manufacturing sector. And they have two reports. One is the official one that comes from the National Bureau of Statistics, and one is what's known as the Caxon survey, and that one tends to look at smaller companies. The Caxon is out this morning. It's still showing growth. It is coming in at 52.5. Anything over 50 shows expansion rather than contraction. For Purchasing Managers Index, that's what PMI stands for. But it is slowing, and it has grown by less than in January, which is not the direction of travel that anyone wants.
This is Li Qiang. He is the Premier of China. This is an excerpt from his speech this morning.
While recognizing our achievements, we are keenly aware of problems and challenges that will confront us. The global economic strength lacks steam, and also the external environment is more complex, severe, and uncertain. And the growth at home is not solid enough. And the expectation is low, and many small and medium-sized enterprises face difficulties in their operation. And we have seen the pressures from overall job creation and employment problems.
Of course, major trading partner of the UAE, so we're watching this one closely.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Yeah, double dose of PMI data over the next 20 minutes or so, live to Riyadh and Chris Payne. But right now, delighted to be joined live on Microsoft Teams by Ralf Wiegert, who's head of S&P Global Market Intelligence for the Middle East and North Africa. He's the guy behind the report that just came out, and he joins us now live on the line from Berlin. Ralf, thanks very much indeed for getting up early to speak to us today.
Good morning, Richard. Nice to meet you.
It looks like a great print from the UAE this morning, a reading of 57.1. Tell us more.
Yeah, that's really phenomenal. It's not only the headline index. The strongest figure was probably the output index, which actually surged to 64.6, which is a 5-year high. This is truly an outstanding result.
Talk us through that. What's the story behind those numbers that you're getting from these purchasing managers?
We're seeing basically improving numbers across the board. There is not one single number which disappointed us this time. We have very strong new orders index. The new orders index actually edged down somewhat, but still is in very strong territory at 60.4 points. We also have the future output index, which is looking forward at the next couple of months, and this signals extremely strong growth at 62.3, an increase of 3.3 points, and we also have, you know, all the supplier delivery index, the input costs, all are improving.
I mean, just put this into context for us. We know that anything over 50 in a PMI report indicates expansion. A lot of these numbers you're rattling off are over 60. I mean, that to me sounds like very rarefied air. How does that compare to the rest of the world?
It's actually close to the top of the world, I would say. I don't have the complete overview, but I rarely have seen a country similar to the UAE or KSA, with these kinds of figures at such a long time frame. You know, the UAE has been at this kind of level for more than 2 years now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Saudi Arabia. I will get back to the UAE, but I'm going to bring in my colleague Brandy Scott, who's going through your Saudi Arabia report right now. Brandy, what questions have you got for Ralf?
Yeah, I'm interested in the bounce back, Ralf. Good morning. It's lovely to speak to you again. We saw the January PMI for Saudi slump to a 2-year low. It's come roaring back for February, 57.2. That growth rate, its quickest in 5 months. What's behind that turnaround?
Well, that's a really good question. We suspect there was some kind of concern in the Saudi market about supply chain issues, about the Red Sea crisis. But we have seen, so for example, purchase costs rose to a 12-year high. So in January, but that fell 2 points again in February, and looks to us no longer as a major issue. So whilst we think in January there was genuine concern in the Saudi market about those supply chain issues, we do not no longer see this. at least at this level in February.
Ralf, let's get back to the UAE where we are now. Overwhelmingly a bullish report here. But of course, you do look at some of the risk factors as well. And you say capacity pressures were apparent. And you particularly mention Red Sea shipping.
Yeah. I mean, we have the supply chain, the supplier's delivery times index went down in February to 52.2 from 53.8 in January. So 52.2 is a level that was reached two times or below was reached in 2023. So there wasn't a supply chain crisis in the Red Sea when that level was reached. In 2021 and 2022, we have seen for the UAE in particular levels of that indicator clearly below the 50 mark. So this is not there yet. And unless this index decreases further below the 50 mark, we don't really see an issue.
What about employment? What did we learn about that?
That is slightly accelerating, nicely accelerating to a two-year high, and at 52.1 from 50.8 points. And wage costs are also slightly accelerating. So there is a lot of momentum in the labour market right now.
If we look at some of the, I hesitate to call them negative factors, but some of the issues that you raise within what is a very bullish report, you talk about concerns of a crowded market. And you say that some companies are having to offer discounts to clients to simply retain their market share, never mind expand their market share. What do we know about that?
Yeah, this is visible through the output price index, which actually is still in declining territory, which signals that prices are still going down. And actually, that price decline has been accelerating in February from 47.9 points in January to 47.1 point January to February. And there is obviously some kind of competition going on between companies, and companies have to offer discounts. You know, consumers can strike a bargain, if you will. And this is of course putting a lot of pressure on companies and on profit margins. But you know, given the output level and the PMI index, I think the UAE economy, the non-oil economy, is still very strong.
A final quick word on some of the risk factors ahead. Maybe even speaking outside the confines of the PMI report, you are the head of S&P Global Market Intelligence for the wider region. What are some of the risk factors to what is a very, very strong economic output that you see for countries like the UAE and Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I mean the risk factors clearly is on the political side of things. If there was a major escalation in the Red Sea or in Gaza, this could certainly make the PMI index actually declining or not at that level. On the economic side, we have the interest rates, to which the UAE has been responding, at least somewhat stronger compared to other countries like Saudi Arabia, for instance. So if interest rates are pushed, the first interest rate cut in the US is pushed down further down the line, that could also lead to a decline of the index.
Ralf, it's great talking to you. Really appreciate you getting up early this morning. As I mentioned, joining us live on the line from Berlin today. Those are the thoughts of Ralf Wiegert, head of S&P Global Market Intelligence for the Middle East and North Africa. Just to recap, PMI data out, not just for the UAE, but for Saudi Arabia. And up next, we cross live to Riyadh. The economist Chris Payne joins us live going through the Saudi data and the story on the ground in Saudi.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Richard mentioned the UAE PMI PMI data there, the Purchasing Managers Index, that measures what's happening in the non-oil economy and how business leaders feel about it going forward. We've also got the Saudi numbers this morning. They are also very, very good. 57.2 is where Saudi came in at. Here's the headline. Business activity growth rebounds in February. Sales up, employment up, output up as well. We are joined on the line by a conveniently Riyadh-based economist. Dr. Chris Payne is the Chief Research Officer at Coldwell Banker in Saudi Arabia. It's lovely to speak to you, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy.
So we've got this bounce back, the PMI growing at its fastest rate in 5 months, and that follows quite a slump in January. Can you put this in context for us first off? What did we see in those January numbers?
Yes. So in January was, again, I think it was the lowest reading for 2 years. And I think we slipped down to, was it 55.5 on the measure. Now, that still means we've got growth, but it was lower than numbers we've seen getting up to 60 really throughout 2023. And I think what we'd seen was concern over pricing pressures, sort of cost inputs, too much, if you like, those costs not really being passed on to consumers, suggesting there was too much competition, worries about some of the trade routes, obviously in the Red Sea, and that how that might be affecting purchases, and a general concern that maybe growth was decelerating. That was the story for January. And I think before we talk about February, or at least we talk about that headline number, I think it's important to remember that the time series like this, and that's what the PMI is, we get a number every month, you know, they are necessarily volatile and they do move up and down. But, you know, each month we look at the particular number and we try and read something into it. And last month we were trying to read maybe a pause in growth. And I think I used the expression, you know, we're sort of taking a breather, coming up for air. And then we had to really see what was going to happen, you know, throughout the year.
OK, well, it does seem we have come up for air in February. A pickup in new order growth, a pickup in employment. Expectations for future activity were also pretty positive. January, was it an anomaly, or was it, as we have had the man from S&P, the economist Ralph Weygart, suggest to us this morning, January might have been a little bit overshadowed by concerns about what's happening in the Red Sea might mean for businesses and supply chains?
Well that's exactly the description of what we saw in January. Because remember, it's a sentiment index, the PMI. It's not GDP numbers. It's a survey that goes out across business. You know, how are you feeling? What are you seeing? And if you're seeing issues over deliveries of shipments because of what's going on in the Red Sea, then that's going to affect the sentiment of, well, I've seen less shipments, and therefore, or maybe we're ordering less coming through. And that's going to come through into a sentiment index like the PMI. I think the rebound in February, I mean, obviously, it's very good news for what's going on here. But I don't think it's too surprising either, given the plans for the broader plans for Saudi Arabia in 2024 and 2025. I mean, sitting in Saudi Arabia, there is so much going on. There's so much being announced, and there's so much intention, and things are happening. And obviously, in the world of construction, is where there's a huge amount of focus. And you know, I know, you know, that there is, that, you know, NEOM, the line, there is a lot of work going on like that. And that just gives you an example. So I don't think it's surprising that we've seen a rebound. I think, you know, if things can calm down in the Red Sea, and that's a different discussion entirely, then I would expect to see really sentiment pick up further from here throughout the year.
There is, and if I look at the commentary in this PMI data this morning, there is a little bit of maybe hesitancy, maybe some wait and see when it comes to hiring, which had picked up. But the survey makes note of people, and by people I mean businesses, maybe holding off on decisions due to competitive pressures. They say that's hindering demand and pricing decisions. Some companies are passing on the higher input costs. Some are not. What's that feeling like on the ground?
Well, I think it's, you know, there is a sense, obviously, that there are issues in the region. I wouldn't say, I mean, there is competitive pressures for sure. I would say that fundamentally people are very optimistic, and they're very positive. And you know, where I'm sitting, there is definitely a sense of invest and growth. So maybe it depends what business you're looking at. As I said, I mean, I think the expectations this year are very positive. But, you know, PMI indices are, I mean, economists write words that always hedge their bets. I know I'm one of them. And if you ask purchasing managers, you know, how are you feeling still at the moment, there's going to still be concern, for instance, about shipments in the Red Sea. So there is hedging of bets. And I think it's also important to point out that the number 57.2 is certainly an improvement on the 55.3 or 5 from January. But it, you know, we're not at the level of, we're not pushing 60 on that index that we had pushed for some of 2023. So all of these, there's always uncertainty. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty in many areas of the world. And I think that that is obviously going to feed through into sentiment. But at the same time, as the year progresses and we see real activity, so much of it in the construction sector accelerating, that is our expectation, then I would expect to see those concerns drift away into a more overall full-on sort of positive sentiment, on a set of positive reading on the index.
While we've got you, Chris, I know that the PMI numbers look at the non-oil activity, but we did yesterday hear that those voluntary oil cuts from some OPEC Plus members were going to be extended. Saudi expected to shoulder roughly around half of that. What does that mean for the Saudi budget, for the coffers, and Saudi's ability to execute on these projects?
Yes. So obviously, you know, the Saudi part of one of the sort of lesser understood things about Vision 2030 is that the central place that was given to fiscal sustainability, to ensuring that over the cycle, you know, the Saudi budget was balanced and obviously generated surpluses. And those surpluses at the government level are very important for some of the spending. So these cuts, you know, extended cuts, are trying to keep oil prices steady. $80 to $85 is a kind of magic mark, if you like, where people suspect that the Saudi government will balance its budget. But a small deficit is not particularly problematic, given that debt to GDP is under 40%, which would, you know, many countries around the world would be, you know, highly jealous of. But the other side of the coin is that much of the funding for these giga projects is actually coming out of the public investment fund, of the PIF, which is the sovereign wealth fund here in Riyadh. It isn't on budget, it's off budget. And to that extent, it's not necessarily reliant on the day-to-day fluctuations of oil. Although higher oil prices and more profits out of Aramco clearly do replenish the funds of the sovereign wealth fund.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately, with Dr. Chris Payne this morning. We are hitting our marks. Dr. Chris Payne, the Chief Research Officer for Coldwell Banker in Saudi Arabia.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's have a look in some detail at our two stories this morning about two very similar companies, one listed, one soon to be. SALIC releasing its full year earnings and Parkin shares going on sale today. Very pleased to be joined now by the boss of Global Capital Partners, the market watcher, Sameer Lakhani. Sameer, good morning. It's nice to speak to you.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
Right, let's kick off by talking about SALIC. We've got revenue up just under 11.5%. They say that's the strongest full-year performance in terms of income since the gates went live in 2007. What are you taking from it?
It's been a strong performance. 87.5% of their revenues was toll usage, the balance coming in from fines. Going forward, I think they're projecting a slightly more conservative growth of about between 4 to 6%. But this, of course, excludes the new initiatives that we know that that the CEO has announced and that it's part of their integrated report. But all in all, a very strong top-line performance.
Yeah, one of the things that was said within the note was that they were looking to expand and widen their revenue. We know about the two gates coming up, but there was reference to hopefully more private parking activity.
There was reference to private parking activity. There was reference to expanding to other geographies. And there was also a reference for a potential move to a dynamic pricing, or otherwise commonly known as the surge pricing model, All of this is subject to approval by the RTA and the Executive Council of Dubai. But SALIC has made explicit reference to all of these three initiatives that they are considering in the coming years.
Do they need to diversify their revenue?
They're doing very well on its own, but if they are to get ahead of the population growth story, that is essentially the growth story of all the three RTA stable plays, then they do need to look at staying nimble and competitive. If we look, for example, at the international competitors, going back to Transurban, which is listed in Australia, they started off strong out of the gate, but over the last 4 or 5 years, their growth has kind of stagnated, and that is reflected in the share price. And I think SALIC management wants to be ahead of the game, which they have demonstrated both in terms of their performance and in terms of the announcements that they have made.
Okay. Well, is share population growth not enough, I guess is what I'm asking?
The 2040 urban plan that SALIC mentions, that Parking mentions, that pretty much every single listed company in the UAE mentions, talks about population increasing by 60% from current levels over the next 16 years. So yes, it is about population. But remember, you're looking at multiple objectives that the government is having, and these carve-out companies are competing for different modes of transportation. Currently, 60% of mobility is done through private cars. It is anticipated that will change. The 2040 urban plan calls for that percentage to come down. And if that does come down, then you are looking for other sources of revenue, which is why SALIC is announcing other initiatives.
Okay, well, before we move on to Parkin, let's take the other big number out of this first full-year earnings report. That is net profit, which fell for the full year down 17%. It was up fourth quarter, just under 16%. But as SALIC itself points out, it didn't become its own separate company until mid-July, and now it has an awful lot of new expenses. What kind of new costs has SALIC taken on?
Well, really, the two headline numbers is the first one is the concession expense. SALIC was incorporated in the middle of 2022, so they only incurred the concession expense for the half year of 2022. For 2023, they incurred the full year, which is what has led to a decrease in their bottom line. You've also had an increase in finance costs, which is not unexpected given the rise in interest rates. Remember, despite these two negative forces, EBITDA margins are still very healthy, coming in at about 64 to 65%. That is what they are forecasting for the year going forward. And again, just by way of comparison, that is more than double what you are seeing in the international markets for toll operators such as Transurban, which come in at EBITDA levels of about 25 to 30%.
Okay, well, let's have a look at the other RTA spin-off, and that is Parkin. Shares going on sale this morning. Talk to me about that price range.
The price range is competitive. It's a narrow band. It's a book-building process. But you are looking at, even at the top end of the range of 2 dirhams and 10 fils per share, you're looking at a price earnings multiple of about 16. Compare that to its competitors in the U.S. You're looking at roughly half of that number. You've got international companies that trade on the Nasdaq, such as SP Plus, that have a multiple of about 32, with far lower growth rates and again far lower EBITDA margins. Parking comes in at an EBITDA margin of about 55% and a cash conversion rate of nearly 100%. So by all metrics, international Parking is being priced fairly competitively.
What are we going to see, though, do you think, in terms of allocation? I realise this is crystal ball time, but if we look at the other RTA IPOs, I mean, this is going to be oversubscribed. What are retail investors likely to end up with? And is it a given that the offering for them will also be expanded?
Given what happened, so going back to what happened with SALIC, the retail tranche was 7%. for Dubai Taxi. It was initially set at 10%, later increased to 12%. The retail tranche that has been announced for parking is 10%. Given the level of retail interest, it is fairly likely that that tranche, the size of that tranche, will be increased. The minimum guaranteed allocation for each and every individual retail investor currently is going to be 2,000 shares. The appetite suggests that that is not enough. We've got a very strong share performance by both Salik and by Dubai Taxi. Salik is up 78% in terms of price alone. Given total shareholder returns, it's up more than 86%. Parking in its early months is up more than 20%. So, I mean, whilst that's not any indication that the same will happen with parking, investors are clamoring for higher allocations, and they're just not getting it in the IPO tranche. So, yes, there will be considerable pressure for the retail tranche to be increased.
Sameer Lakhani is the Managing Director of Global Capital Partners, speaking to us today on the day that those parking shares go on sale. Thank you so much for your time.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.